You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party's Simon Court.
2 weeks ago saw the government announcing its budget for 2026, which saw major cuts across the public sector alongside new spending announcements for health, defence and numerous other sectors. The health sector particularly has been under significant pressure over recent years, with healthcare workers consistently calling for more support due to overcrowding and underfunding. While the government committed $6 billion to health earlier in its term, the problem has yet to significantly improve. The government has also committed to increasing defence spending, with accusations floating around that New Zealand has been a freeloader dependent on military support from our allies in the US and Australia. The new commitment will see New Zealand's defence funding expected to rise to 2% of GDP by 2028. This budget also saw cuts to the Fees Free program, which subsidised tertiary course fees during students' final year of study. The government says that this program was too expensive and did not deliver enough value for money. Lastly, ACT's Laura McClure, alongside three other MPs from multiple political parties, was banned from entering China last week following a visit to Taiwan. For this week's catch-up with the ACT Party, I spoke to MP Laura McClure about each of these issues, beginning with discussions over her recent ban from entering China. What are your takeaways from this travel ban, and how does it affect New Zealand's or your broader stance towards China?
Yeah, look, it was really surprising, given the fact that members of parliament for many years have been travelling to Taiwan on an annual basis under the One China policy. So it was nothing new, this trip. It was something that happens every year. I'm part of a cross-party friendship group between Taiwan MPs and New Zealand MPs. And look, the trip is really to discuss our cultural ties, and quite a few people know now, but if you don't, Māori have Indigenous ties back to one of the 17 iwi in Taiwan, so it's pretty cool. They even speak pretty much similar language, like Te Reo, and their language is very similar. And they're also our eighth biggest export market, so that economic tie is really important. So talking trade and meeting with businesses, New Zealand businesses and businesses that trade between the two countries is very valuable. So look, I was really surprised, considering this is a long-standing tradition of it occurring. And I was obviously pretty upset that it'd been banned, considering neither member of parliament, even my colleagues that went in the last couple of years, have not been banned. I was a bit surprised and disappointed, and I believe the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the Prime Minister's office are making that quite clear to the Chinese embassy in New Zealand.
And next I wanted to talk about the budget. It's a little while ago now, but we didn't get the chance to catch up with the ACT Party last week. First, I want to talk about health. We've seen a big bump in health spending announced in this year's budget. Where is that health spending going exactly?
Yeah, so it is a record funding for health this time around. There's quite a few different areas, but essentially it's investing in more medicines to make sure that we are, a first world country that we claim to be, and make sure that we've got the best medicines available for things like cancers and leukemia, cystic fibrosis, rheumatoid arthritis, all of the autoimmune diseases. So there's a big bump in that. There's also a boost for ambulance services as well, because we know that frontline care is really important. And some more funding towards that frontline, which I think anybody in New Zealand who's been to a hospital in the last couple of years will know, at the coalface, it's pretty tough out there. And even just getting an appointment with a GP can be really a real struggle. So I think it is important that we invest in something that, as taxpayers and as New Zealanders, we expect to, be able to get a good quality service out of our health system.
You mentioned some of the struggles that the healthcare system has been facing. We've seen overcrowding and we've seen underfunding criticised from within the health system since COVID and since that COVID period. We saw also $6 billion of health spending committed in an earlier budget by this government, which didn't solve the problem, right? We still see overcrowding and we still see some underfunding problems as well. How can we be confident that this new spend is going to have an impact?
Because I think it's not just about the spend, it's actually about driving performance and cutting waste in the back as well. So it's not always about money. We could tip a whole lot of money into something and it doesn't always fix the problem. So it's things like getting the wait lists down when it comes to elective surgery. It's about running them more efficiently. I mean, we have people that say don't show up for their elective surgery, and that can bump the list like quite significantly. You have an operating theatre ready to go and then they can't actually complete the surgery. So there's stuff that they're doing in the around the back that is around actually better communications with people, making the system go much faster on that elective side, which actually frees up the doctors for like more of the frontline emergency as it comes through. So I think it's not just about the money. I think it's about finding the efficiencies as well and the ways in which it can work smarter, not necessarily, you know, throwing more money at a problem and not really having anywhere to go with it.
Next, I want to talk about defence spending. We've seen that in this budget, efforts to raise our defence spending in line with increasing its percentage of our relative GDP as a country. Why is this increased defence spending coming about now? Is this something that's very important to the government, developing our military?
Yeah, look, ACT actually campaigned last election on increasing to 2% GDP because we could see the geopolitical situation is getting more and more volatile. Like, we're in the most volatile position as a planet that we've probably been in since pre-World War II. So, like, our relative peace and security living at the bottom of the planet is not necessarily a given, and I think it's really important that New Zealand thinks about how we can secure ourselves, our sovereignty, and also secure all of our shipping routes. One of the most important things, I think, is getting goods in and out of New Zealand, and we need to be able to pull our weight in that retrospect. So I think it's great that we're investing more in defence. We're looking at having more autonomous vehicles, which we know New Zealand companies and defence industry here in New Zealand are like world leaders at. So things like drones, whether it's on the water, whether it's in the sky, will actually help us do not just defence things, but for example, monitoring for illegal fishing out in the Pacific, and be used for natural disasters, which we know we have plenty of as well in our region.
There's been questions raised of New Zealand increasing its defence spending and potentially becoming seen as more of a defence spender, right? Inadvertently putting more of a target on our back, I guess. How would you respond to those claims? And do you think that's something that New Zealand has to worry about?
No, look, I think it's everybody around the globe is considering how much defence spending they should be investing, given that instability. And our partners, our one ally is Australia, or true ally, should I say, or official, and they've been upping their defence spending. And I think it's only reasonable that New Zealand should try and match that and make sure that we've got some sort of value add. And like I said, it's not just about preparing for future potential conflicts. It's actually about making sure that our defence force can do the job that they need to do here in New Zealand and in the Pacific, which is a huge deal. I don't know if many of the listeners are aware, but we have the largest economic exclusion zone out off the coast of New Zealand. And, you know, part of our role in out there is looking out for illegal fishing, for example, and making sure our defence force, our Navy, are able to, and our Air Force, you know, have the equipment and the gear they need to go out and do that sort of work as well, is really important to New Zealanders and definitely the best interests of the Pacific.
Defence Minister Chris Benk, also talking about defence spending, mentioned that it could be helpful for New Zealand to revisit the nuclear conversation. What's the ACT Party's view on the nuclear-free stance that New Zealand has maintained?
Look, I actually haven't talked to my colleagues about this, so I don't want to give an ACT Party perspective, but I can give you my perspective. Look, the Prime Minister has said that New Zealand is not going to change a nuclear-free policy, but I have to actually agree with Chris Penk in a way. I think when you even say the word nuclear to New Zealanders, it means so many different things, and it could mean, you know, nuclear power, it could mean nuclear waste, nuclear fallout, it could mean nuclear weapons, all of these things. I think having some kind of conversation around nuclear-powered, whether it's nuclear-powered submarines or, say, vessels coming into New Zealand in the future, is something to have in advance, because Australia have ordered these. Like I said, they're our formal ally. Are we going to, at some point in the future, not allow them to dock in, you know, in New Zealand waters if there was some sort of, you know, potential conflict? Like, I think it's worth having those conversations earlier, and I'm not taking a stance either way. I just think it's worth having while you're in a position to discuss things rather than being forced into making a decision under, you know, not so favourable circumstances. So I have to kind of somewhat agree with Chris Pink that, look, the ACT Party itself doesn't have a position. We're quite proud of New Zealand's nuclear-free stance, but I think there is no harm in having an adult conversation around it.
Lastly, I want to talk about fees-free. It's been a pretty big announcement over the course of this budget, and also the announcement that university fees are going to go up as well. It's hard for students not to see this as a slap in the face, especially as many are struggling with getting jobs, especially as many are struggling with high cost of living already and getting saddled with a larger amount of debt that many of them didn't expect to see, right? Some people would have started their degree with the proposition of last year fees-free and now no longer have that available. What's the ACT Party's response to these students who are saying, you know, we've been a little bit screwed over by this announcement?
Yeah, look, I acknowledge that it's really tough out there for uni students, as it is for families with young kids, for example. Like, everybody is finding it really hard. But fees-free was really expensive and poorly targeted. It's failed to solve the problem that it was really meant to address. And much of the funding went to people who, you know, you've already made it. If you've got in the door at university, you've done actually pretty well in life. And, you know, there's been really underinvestment in things like the vocational studies, like trades, for example. And now we, you know, I go to small businesses quite frequently and they're screaming out for, like, electrical engineers and mechanical engineers, for example, and the trade side of things, not necessarily the degree side. So we've got that shortage in our workforce, which means that we need to have, you know, bring people into the country to fill those spots. So ideally, we would want young people to have opportunities in those areas. But I accept that it would be, yeah, it's an extra debt that you take on. It's pretty hard. But I'd also say, like, you know, the educational funding pyramid in New Zealand is inverted. If you look at how much funding, say, ECE gets, and parents having to pay sort of $300, $400, $500 a week to send a child off to ECE so that they can continue working, right up to the funding into primary school and then even into high school. If you look at tertiary, it's still really subsidised here in New Zealand, and we need to think about where are we getting the best value for money. And while I accept it'd be really hard as a student if you've got to that point, and you're like, oh my goodness, I'm now getting this extra debt, I also would turn around and say, like, think about those poorer families and those kids that are just starting out in their education, and the chances of them getting to where you've got to start university are much, much lower. So we really need to be investing in them and where we could get them into the workforce at some point.
There's a huge amount of money that the government is getting from scrapping fees-free. As you've mentioned, there are high costs of ECE right now and other education for families with kids. Could the government just take this money and subsidise those costs right now? Is that something that the government's interested in doing?
Well, look, I think I don't know exactly where they're reallocating it to, but there has been a big uplift in definitely in primary school, like having teacher aides, for example. So we've seen some increased funding for that, which classrooms have been screaming out for quite some time. We've seen an increase in, like, the infrastructure side of things, like for new builds of classrooms. I know here in Christchurch, some of the schools around Hawswell are getting some extra rooms, which they're desperate for because the classrooms are getting up over 30 kids per class. So I think it has been reinvested well into the education side of it. Even ECE has seen a small uplift as well. But overall, I do think that the way we fund education does need to change, and it needs to be a more streamlined, fair way of doing it, depending on, you know, what people can and cannot afford as well.
I think another thing that's important about the fees-free change as well is that the government already changed fees-free. Earlier in its term, the government said, we can't have first-year fees-free, let's move it to the last year of study to incentivise students to stay until that final year. Why spend all of the time, all of the effort, all of the money in changing this policy and shifting things around just to scrap it again a couple years later?
Yep, look, I reckon that inconsistency is really not fair, and like you alluded to it at the start, that there will be some people that have started and they've like, oh, okay, first year's gone, but I'm going to get my third year. I think that if we were going to make this call, we should have just done it from the outset. And that would have been at stance all along, but I can't talk for our coalition partners and what it was that they were thinking with this. But I do think that it was always poorly targeted. The statistics show that it didn't encourage more people into university study. Those that got there in the first place were going to attend regardless. And we knew that the vocational side of things, we were seeing shortages in the workforce. So I really think that this has been, in my opinion, and an ex opinion, that we should have actually just done this a lot earlier and reprioritised that money.
That was the ACT Party's Laura McClure speaking to me about the budget and her visit to Taiwan.
That was Simon Court from the ACT Party.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.